You are listening to Podski Wee Wee, a proud member of the Canadian Football Podcast Network.
Try it again. This time, Alex Green scores.
Welcome to Podski Wee Wee. I'm Josh Smith.
I'm Mike Graham.
This is a crappy one, Mike, but before we get into talking about the double dong kick that occurred on Friday night, let's start this off with a little positivity, shall we? You had a couple of cool things happen to you this week regarding the Ticats and some former Ticats. Why don't you share the story with everybody?
Well, the meeting of with C.J. Gable and Joel Figueroa. I know I've seen Figueroa quite a bit where I work. I talk to him every time I see him, pretty much. But on this occasion, I came up to him and said, you know, you guys had a pretty good game last week, and we were talking. He's like, it's all thanks to this guy. And I look over, and I went, holy that's C.J. Gable. And honestly, like, I was a bit starstruck. I don't know, just watching him play for the last 4 or 5 years or whatever it's been with the Ticats, I didn't expect to see him. And, you know, I shook his hand and they're both super nice. I felt kind of weird. I let them go and got back to my work. And then I was like, damn, I got to get a picture with those guys. And then I came up to them like, boys, sorry if this sounds kind of weird, but can I get a picture with you guys? And they're more than happy to do it. And I really appreciate it. And, it was just a really cool experience meeting C.J. Gable and talking to Joel, as I usually do. So it was really fun.
That's pretty cool, man. I always like hearing stories like that. I'll be honest. I'm a little jealous that you sometimes get to run into some CFLers, but I'm also very happy. That's a pretty cool story. What's your next one?
Well, the next one is I guess my cousin lives on PEI, rents property out. I guess she rented out property to Scott Mitchell, and they got to talking, and she mentioned, you know, how I'm a huge fan and we do this podcast. He knew of the podcast, and he asked for my information and sent me some really cool stuff in the mail, you know, a sweatshirt, a t-shirt, a hat, a water bottle, a mini helmet. So, you know, he didn't have to do that. The organization didn't have to do that, and I was really overwhelmed with the kindness of them to do that for me, and I will proudly wear all that stuff around town, and I just want to say big thank you to Scott and the Ticats as a whole.
That's pretty cool, man. I know Scott Mitchell takes a lot of heat, especially around these parts, especially recently, and in a lot of cases it's deserved, but and I've told you this privately, and I'll share it publicly. I've met Scott a couple of times. He introduced himself to me at a game last year. I think I told that story on the show. When I went and watched the Mac U of T game, he came up to me. And like, he's always been really nice to me. He's been very a pleasure to deal with. So I'm not surprised he would do something like this. I know he gets a bad rap, and like I said, in some cases, deservedly so. But I think deep down, he's a really, really good human being. And this is just another instance of this team showing that how fan-friendly they can be. Like, you're right. They don't have to do something like this. And to do that, I think that's pretty darn cool.
Mm-hmm. It seemed like he just went into the Ticats store and went, oh, take this, take this, take this, take this, and just sent it off. It's all really nice stuff. So, you know, me being a lifelong Ticats fan, getting sent something like that from the team is pretty special to me. So I'm just really happy that happened.
Yeah, when you're 80 years old and someone's like, why do you have this ratty old helmet? You'll be able to tell your great-grandkids, well, this is what happened to your great-grandfather one day. And It's all about the stories, right?
Exactly. It's I'm kind of a loss for words. It's just really cool.
Yeah, okay. So sadly, we have to go from something pretty cool to something decidedly uncool, and that was last Friday night. I described it as a double dong kick, and it still feels that way. The Ticats, as we all know, lost a heartbreaker 28-25 to the Calgary Stampeders at Tim Hortons Field in a game that they very easily could have won. They played maybe one of their best games all season, but came out on the losing end. But it was all okay because all we needed was the Saskatchewan Roughriders to win at home against the Red Blacks, and the Ticats would live to fight another day. And that didn't happen. The Roughriders coughed up a 12-point lead in the fourth quarter to Ottawa. The Red Blacks leave with a 1-point victory, scoring with, I think, what, 2 seconds left in the game. Red Blacks win, coupled with Ticats loss, means that's the end of Hamilton's season. Our Hamilton Tiger Cats, with 3 weeks left in the season, are officially eliminated from playoff contention. It's been a while since the Ticats have been out this early. I think 2008 would probably be the last time this team was bad enough to not make it to the final week of the season. Because even in 2012, I was at the game at the Rogers Centre where they were playing the Argos, and it was if the Ticats win, they would have been in the playoffs. They did not win. They lost to the Argos that night and were eliminated. So, man, it's been almost 10 years since the Ticats have been so bad that they're out of it before the season's over. It's a weird feeling, don't you think?
It is a weird feeling. It's a feeling, really. I mean, I love the CFL. I'm gonna watch the games no matter what. But it's just, that you're missing something when your team's not in it. But at the same time, the Ticats did not deserve to be in the playoffs this year. They started 0-8, and that's just too big of a hole to climb out of. And yes, they were a very improved team in the last half of the season, but you just can't put that many wins together. Well, unless you're the Stampeders, putting that many wins together is such a tough task. Even when you have all, I believe that this team still believed that they could get into the playoffs, but it just wasn't meant to be.
Well, on my piece for Three Down, I described this as one of the worst losses in franchise history, and there were a lot of comments about, well, they're 4-11, so how bad could the loss be? And to me, that tells me that people aren't watching. They weren't watching how this team fought back. The team that we've watched over the last 7 weeks was not the team we saw in the first 10. This is a vastly superior football team to the one we saw start 0-8. Yeah, 4-3, but the games they lost, sadly, all at home, came by scores of 3, 8, and 8. One of them went into overtime, and the other two were decided on the very last play of the game. This is a much different football team, and that is why this loss and this elimination kind of hurts, because you saw the team progress and get better. It just was, unfortunately, too little too late, and it's another season where the Ticats won't win the Grey Cup, stretching that long drought to now, what would it be, 18 years, 99 to 17. That's a long time to go titleless in an 8/9 team league. Now we're going to get into the finer points of the game, but I think we obviously have to start with the big play, the pass interference on the game's, essentially the game's final play. Sets up the chip shot field goal for Paredes to take the game and push the Ticats to the brink of elimination, which the Red Blacks would put the final nail in the coffin later that evening. I just have one question, Mike. What the hell was Courtney Steven thinking?
Oh, that's the big one. That's the big question that everyone would like to know, because a veteran player like him taking a pass interference penalty on a play where if that receiver catches the ball, you just have to make sure you tackle him because there's no time on the clock. There's no time for a field goal, no time to win that game on the last play. You just make that tackle or knock down the ball or whatever. You cannot take an interference call in that situation. And that's exactly what he did, and that's why he gets my Bozo of the Week, which actually has been pretty rare this season, giving out Bozos, because we both decided at the start of the season, if we're not going to push it, if there's no standout Bozo, then we're not going to do it. But and it hurts me to give out a Bozo to a player that I have a lot of respect for. I think he's a very talented guy, and I've always been really high on Courtney Steven ever since he's been a tie cat, but that play, man, it just has to go to him because of it.
Yeah, it was a lapse in judgment, plain and simple. Like you said, this is a veteran player, shouldn't be making these mistakes. And as soon as he hit him, as soon as the ball went in the air and I saw where it was going, I just put my head down. I didn't even watch the field goal that ended the game. I had my head, I knew it was over. And it just felt like even if Saskatchewan could have held on, that was that feeling of you go toe to toe with inarguably the top team in this league and you give them your best shot and it's something like this that ends the game. Not a play they made. It wasn't like Calgary did something spectacular. There were some spectacular plays. The Kamar Jordan touchdown catch, for instance, was
Oh,
amazing.
yeah.
But it wasn't as if Calgary vastly overplayed the Ticats in this one. The Stamps won because the Ticats made a one player made a really, really bad decision. And to know that this team's now going home because of it's a tough pill to swallow.
Yeah, it's basically, you boil down the season to one play, and that you could pick that play, and that would be, show someone, how did the Ticats do this season? Show them that one play, and that's pretty much how they did.
Yeah, now I would be remiss if I didn't bring up that Stevens' error wasn't, it was the most critical, but it wasn't the only one in this game. There were a lot of missed opportunities for the Ticats. I got a list of them here, and maybe you have some more to add, but to me, those two missed 2-point conversions loomed large, especially at the end. The defense on Calgary's 2-pointer after their touchdown on the Jordan touchdown, because it was the only offense touchdown they scored, they were playing this weird look like zone, and I can't even remember who caught the ball in the 2-point convert, but he was wide open. There's no one within 7 yards of him. It's like, how do you call that? The blocked punt, which we'll get into a little bit later. There was the missed throw to Luke Tasker on the 3rd and 1 from like the 2 or 3 yard line. That was a questionable call. If they kick a field goal there, you know what I mean? Like different things happen. Or if Mazzoli makes the throw because Tasker was open. If he makes that throw, Tasker has a touchdown. The interception that Mazzoli threw was awful, led only to a Calgary field goal. But that was one of those ones where he's darting up the middle, and if he just runs, he probably picks up 10 to 15 yards. The middle was wide open, but he decides to throw. He throws it late into the wide side of the field. It was easy pickings for the defensive back on that one. There was a touchdown pass to Brandon Banks that went right through his hands at the goal line that if he would have caught, they're completely different game. And then early on in the game, I'm sure you noticed this, but Mazzoli was missing guys deep and out of bounds 2 or 3 times. It was all of these things add up. You know what I mean? Like everything comes together. It's yes, we're going to recall the Courtney Steven mistake, but if any of these other things go Hamilton's way, the Ticats win this football game.
Yeah, it was a lot of mistakes made by the Ticats, and they were still right in it till the end against the best team of all time, the Calgary Stampeders. So, I'm sorry, I just this team bothers me. It's just like they just win and they don't play well, it seems. Like, especially the offense. The defense is lights out, but the offense just isn't impressing me this season. And I don't know. It just seemed to me like that is such a Calgary Stampeder way to win, you know?
Yeah, they get a little lucky, to be honest with you, but you got to be lucky to be good. You got to be good to be lucky sometimes. And
Yeah,
to
yeah.
me, we just, I guess, enumerated all these things that went against the Ticats in this game, all the mistakes they made. And like you said, they were still in this game. It came down to the very last play, and they lost by 3. If they would have made all these mistakes previously in the season, Calgary would have won this game 60-1. You know what I mean? Like, it just tells you, and this is why it hurts so much, because this team has come so far in the season, and it was one of those ones where I feel like if they would have gotten to the playoffs, it reminds me a lot of the 2012 team. If they would have gotten to the playoffs, they would have scared a lot of teams. No one would have wanted to play them. And we're not going to the playoffs, and there's no use thinking about it. But this team overcame all these mistakes and still had a shot to beat the best team ever, as you call them. And they just couldn't get it done. It's a bitter pill to swallow, but it's one we must. And you know what? Let's change things up here. Why don't you talk about the defense? Because to me, with the exception of this play and a handful of plays in this game, I thought they were absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, once again, they held one of the best running backs in the league to very little number. I mean, Terry Williams, I'm not talking about him, but he had the most yards for Calgary rushing the ball. He had 3 carries for 30 yards, Jerome Messam was held to 11 yards on 6 carries. I mean, the rushing defense for the Tiger Cats has been absolutely outstanding the last, 5 or 6 games. So big shout out to them for that. Bo was not that great. I mean, 19 for 34, that's 55% completion percentage, which is lower than Mazzoli's this game. 279 yards, touchdown and interception. And he made plays when he had to win the game, but overall, they really kept this offense in check. I mean, there was no receivers over 100 yards. The rushing was stuffed. So overall, this team did a great job against supposedly a potent Calgary offense.
Well, it just shows you the progress again that this team had made over the course of the season. When these two teams met earlier in the year, Calgary put 60 points on the board. And this one, you're rattling off these numbers. Jerome Messam, 1.8 yards per carry. This is Jerome Messam, the reigning most outstanding Canadian, a guy who has routinely eaten up the Ticats. They made him a complete non-factor. He might as well not have even dressed with the impact he had on this game. And you mentioned Mitchell's numbers. Every single, like, he had fewer attempts, fewer completions, a worse completion percentage, and fewer yards than Mazzoli. And when we talk about the offense, Jeremiah Mazzoli did not have a great game in this one. The only thing Mitchell did that Mazzoli didn't do was throw a touchdown pass. Like, it's the Calgary offense was kept completely in check by a team that people say, oh, they're 4-11. This is a good football team. And yes, they're missing the playoffs because of being a bad football team earlier in the year, but man, just when I was watching this, I sent out a tweet. I said, this is the best defense in the CFL. And despite this loss, I stand by that statement.
Yeah, I think they're up there. And like you were talking about earlier, if this team made the playoffs, I mean, in my opinion, if this team gets into the playoffs, they have a chance of making it to the Grey Cup going through that Eastern Division because, they've been competitive against some of the best teams. They've beaten Winnipeg in Winnipeg. They were competitive against Calgary. They beat BC in BC, but BC's, whatever. But they're a Western Division team. They're not Montreal, you know what I mean? So I think if they squeezed into the playoffs, they would have a shot at making it to the Grey Cup. But, that's all ifs and buts. So, yeah, it's too bad that they couldn't have turned it around a little bit earlier. Because if they got one more win, then we'd still be talking about playoff chances right now.
Yeah, you didn't even bring up the two games against Edmonton that they very nearly won as well. So, and that was when they weren't very good, and they went toe to toe with the Eskimos and could have won each of those games. Like, we're gonna look back on this season and see a lot of things where it's like, oh, if this would have happened, if that would have happened, then this team would have made the playoffs and maybe gone on a run. But the one thing, and we'll get back into talking about this game specifically in a second. But the one thing that I take from this is I look at how this team came around in the second half, and it kind of has me, and maybe I'm a fool. Maybe I'm a fool, and you can call me a fool if you want, Mike, but it has me a little excited about 2018. If they can keep a lot of this together, keep this coaching staff intact, keep these players, add a couple pieces here and there, they're going to lose some guys. That's just the nature of pro football, but I kind of like where this team could be headed in 2018. If they could end the season with a few wins here and end the second half of the season with a winning record in the second half, I think it would alleviate a lot of the concerns that fans around here have going into 2018. Because you think, oh man, 4-11, they missed the playoffs, they're out of it, 3 weeks left in the season. But oh man, they won 6 of their last 10 games. That's not so bad. Maybe, you know what I mean? Like, I think it would give some optimism, some hope to a fan base that really, really needs it.
I think the optimism and hope is already there. I don't think it matters these last 3 games if they win or lose or whatever, because to me, the optimism has already been built in through these last 5 or 6 games where they've done really well. So it doesn't matter to me what they do in the last 3 games because to me, it's just preseason football. The optimism for next year has already been set in, pounded into my head. So I'm already there, buddy.
Well, that's fair. That's fair. I just think that everything's going to be forgotten, what they did and what they didn't do over the winter. And if we can point to, hey, these guys went 7-3 in their final 10, or they went 6-4 in their final 10, it'll give you like a something tangible to hold on to. I agree. I think having seen the way this team performed, like I mentioned, they have 3 losses in their last 7, and they're all by one score. And they came down to the last play in overtime. Like, that tells me that this team is a couple of breaks away from being 7-0. And yeah, it's wishful thinking to think that they could have done that. And yes, they dug themselves a huge hole with the 8 straight losses. And I get all that. And I understand that people are going to – that's what we're going to get inundated with. Like, this team did it to themselves. And I totally agree. But over these last 7 weeks, since Labor Day, this has been a completely different football team. And even though we're sitting here in October talking about the end of the season, I'm excited for 2018 already.
Yep, so am I. There's a lot of questions to be answered, especially at the most – important position on the field, quarterback. But there's a lot of positivity going on here. There's a lot of good players on this team. And the way that June Jones came in here, did his thing, reversed the fortune of this team, because they were a really bad team.
I don't think their words in the English language might describe how bad this team was. I understand your lack of ability to find the words, because I like to consider myself a man with a large vocabulary, and I don't know what word would accurately describe how bad this team was in the summer.
He came in, he established a running game, the defense got way better, and you can't give a lot of credit to June Jones about that. That's more of a Philip Lawley deal right there. But the team has just been way better since he came in. And I think he's going to be the head coach of this team next year. And I'm excited to see what he can bring to the table with a training camp and a full season.
Well, the funny thing is let's work on the assumption that with two games against Montreal and a game against Ottawa that may or may not be meaningless for the Red Blacks, it depends on how things shake out the next week. This team, if they finish 7-11, that's the exact same record they had last year. But won't you go into this, and they made the playoffs last year, but won't you go into this offseason with a lot more optimism than you did last? Even though they came really close to beating Edmonton in the playoff game and nearly got back to the East Final. Like, I just feel like last offseason I was so – I even said it on the show. We talked about it. I was drained. I was happy that the offseason was coming. This year, though, they could finish with the same or even a worse record. They could finish 4-14 if they lose these last three games. And I don't think they will, but they could. There will still be so much more in me to be like, oh, man, I can't wait till June gets here and we can watch this team. Like you said, June Jones getting a full offseason. Because I think unless he doesn't want to be here, I cannot see him not being the head coach of this team next year. He has earned – and we talked about it last week. He's absolutely earned the right to take this team further into the future. I will be excited for training camp and the start, and maybe training camp starts a week earlier because next year we go to that 21-week season. So it's like there's so much to be excited for with this Ticats team, despite the fact that they are eliminated earlier than they have been in a decade, and they're not going to play us for the first time in 5 years. It's like, just, I don't know, there's more optimism around this team at this time at the end of the season this year than there was last year, and it's weird to think that based on how both seasons played out. No?
Well, it is odd because, you know, we're probably going to have a worse record than we did last year. We're not going to make the playoffs. But you look at the problem areas that we had, you know, the concerns that we had going into the offseason last year. It was this offensive line isn't very good. Or the you know, that we have the interior, but the left tackle and right tackle are kind of question marks right now. Not sure how that's going to turn out. You look at them now, they're a pretty damn good offensive line with three Canadians in the middle, the rookie Riker Matthews, and Tony Washington coming in. So that's not a concern for me right now. The secondary looks pretty damn good too. That's not really a concern. And those were the two big concerns last season, and we don't have that right now. So even though we have a worse record, there is a lot more optimism, in my eyes anyways, going into next season.
Yeah, and we have question marks, like you said, at the game's most pivotal position, but whether it's Mazzoli who gets re-signed or it's Caleros that comes back, I think this offense can click. And we saw some good things in this offense. It's hard to sort of single anyone out because I think the offense had an okay game against the Stampeders. Like Mazzoli, 24-41. It's only 58.5% under that 60% threshold. And what was he, 80-something percent a week ago? He threw for 326 yards, but no TDs and the awful interception I brought up earlier, but he had 8 carries for 29 yards and a rushing touchdown. Like he played that typical Jeremiah Mazzoli game, and yet the team, even with a few mistakes that he made, still was in this game. You mentioned the running game. Alex Green didn't do much, and they went for long stretches where they didn't run the football, which was very weird to see. This was probably the least balanced game I think we've seen from the Ticats since Jones has taken over. Only 13 carries for Green, but he had 47 yards and he scored two touchdowns. So he's getting used in the plop situation that you like to talk about with the quarterbacks, but they're handing it to Green and it's working. So yet you add Mazzoli with his running skills and you put Green there. It's like we've been talking about for weeks now. The Ticats have a balanced offense and lo and behold, they're in a lot more football games than they were at the start of the season.
Yeah, and you know, you look at this receiving corps and it, you know, there's some guys that could come back and they could make a difference. Shamar Chambers has showed me a lot. He could come back and be a big part of this team. You know, Jalen Saunders, Brandon Banks comes in, Luke Tasker, Fantuz with a full offseason to get completely healthy comes back. And, you know, we could have a pretty good receiving corps. So there's a ton of good things to talk about going into this offseason.
And don't forget, Terrence Tolliver missed the season due to injury. Imagine what, like, to me, if when I'm looking at this team going into the offseason, my number one priority, re-sign Brandon Banks. He has proven beyond a shadow of a doubt, and we've been saying this for weeks now, that he can be a bona fide, legitimate receiver in a CFL offense. He's a free agent at the end of the season. He was asked to take a pay cut, but come on. If there's anyone in the Ticats front office that's listening, please get a contract with Brandon Banks' name on it because this team cannot afford to lose him. He has been spectacular, and I would hate to see him finally morph into a number one receiver. Maybe not a number one receiver, but you know what I mean? Like a legitimate threat, not just deep threat, but he can catch the ball anywhere. I would hate to see him finally emerge as that and then see him go play elsewhere. It would piss me off to no end.
Yeah, and the thing is about Banks is he had one big game, and sometimes, you know, defenses look at the film and they adapt and they you know, they can take away the big numbers from receivers. And that hasn't been the case, you know. He's consistently put up good numbers each game, and now might not have reached 100 yards in each game, but he's contributed every single game. And defenses just can't seem to stop him right now. So I also really want to see him back in black and gold as a receiver.
I think he's had over 100 yards in each of the last three games, and that's a stretch that's what top receivers do. You mentioned that the Stamps didn't have a 100-yard receiver in this game, and they have some darn good receivers in that offense. For Banks to go over 100 yards on three consecutive occasions, you can't look at this guy. He's actually... To be perfectly honest here, he's coming to the forefront of being my pick for this team's most outstanding player. I know he hasn't had the full season that, say, a Larry Dean has, but if you're looking at a guy on offense that has become that, for lack of a term, outstanding player, it's Brandon Banks.
Yeah, it is. It really is. He's scoring touchdowns. He's, you know, he's getting those screen passes and making big yards. He's going down the field, stretching the defenses. He's been awesome, just awesome since they put him into the offense.
So that's all I really got to talk about offensively. I feel like we can move on to special teams, and there's not a ton to talk about there either, but I think we have to bring up Kenny Allen's debut performance. Unfortunately, the first thing we have to talk about is a story I would like you to share, because I don't want to pat myself on the back too much. His first punt was blocked, and Mike, what did I tell you about half an hour before the game started?
Well, he sent me a text, and obviously you were watching him kick, and he said he's kind of slow getting the kickoff. Expect a punt block to happen, and, you know, what happens very early in the game, a punt block, and I said to myself, you son of a bitch. Like, good call, very good call, and it wasn't necessarily because of the slow kick. It was because of a missed block, but even so, like, great call, buddy.
Yeah, it's one of those ones that I wish I wasn't right on. And you're right, it had nothing to do with his kicking. It was a Stamps player just got free up the middle. How that happens, I have no idea. And it was I'm watching it happen going, oh my God, they're going to block this punt. And they blocked the punt. And then Allen kind of had a hard time getting into a groove. We saw some punts that were less than stellar. I feel like he got better punting as the game went on. And I thought he had a really good night kicking field goals, which is apparently something that he hadn't done a ton of since his days at Michigan. Even there, he was more of a punter than a place kicker. So he went to the NFL, he tried on the NFL. I think I read he was with the Ravens in preseason a year ago or something like that. So he's more known as a punter than he is a place kicker. And I thought he had a pretty decent night kicking the ball. So, like, overall, I think his performance, it was uneven, but I think I hewed more towards the positive side. How about you?
Yeah, I'd lean towards the positive side. You know, he let's see, he was 2 for 2 for field goals. Now they did he didn't really get tested that much on the on length of field goals. His longest was 27 yards. His average on punts was 45.9, which isn't terrible, but he could get that average up, I'd say. His longest was 51 yards. But for a guy that just got signed, you know, thrown into the fire in a must-win game, he did pretty well.
So, before we finish off here, obviously we have to hand out the Glorious Player of the Week for this week. And we've talked a bunch about him, so I won't go too much in depth. But for me, it's Brandon Banks. 6 catches for 115 yards. Just another stellar outing from him. And it's, like I said, it's hard to deny how he has completely transformed his game. He is a receiver, not a returner anymore. And it's been a lot of fun to watch, and I hope we get to see him do this in black and gold over a full season and for many, many more seasons to come. That's it for this sad, sad end to the Ticats season. It's time to get into some new stuff, and this was a pretty light week for not only CFL news but Ticats news as well. The only thing I have to talk about here, Mike, and we're not probably not going to spend too much time on it, is Jeremiah Mazzoli, for his performance against the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, was named one of the CFL's 3 Players of the Week. It's the second time this season that Mazzoli has been named a Player of the Week, and in 2017, the only Ticat to receive such an honor. So I think we can both agree that after his 81 or so percent 300-yard performance in the win over Winnipeg, Mazzoli was very deserving of being a player of the week. I believe he was our player of the week, so of course we believe he should be the league's player of the week.
And it just adds to the fact when you consider that it was on the road in Winnipeg against a really good team and a solid fan base who, you know, it's just a tough place to play. And he went in there and performed at a top level.
Absolutely. So CFL news-wise, there was absolutely nothing to talk about. But I do want to talk about something that did happen but didn't. The trade deadline came and went on Wednesday, and not a single trade was made. There seemed to be some anger out there, I feel, from some fans, as I think people hope that maybe Montreal would start trading off some of their veteran players like Bowman, John Bowman, Chip Cox, Steph Logan, guys like that, because they were eliminated from the playoffs on Monday. And I even saw a few Ticat fans online say that the team was unlucky to have been eliminated from the playoffs after the deadline because now they couldn't trade anyone. And to me, that's a weird thing to say. Wouldn't you want your team that you cheer for to be in the playoff race for as long as possible, regardless of whether they can trade off assets or not? And I always find this when it comes to trade deadlines in football to be very weird. And I feel like in Canada, I don't know if it's this hockey mentality that people have, where they look at the CFL and they think, oh, the trade deadline's coming up, so a bunch of trades should happen. That's not very common. And I know we've seen a couple trades this year with the Ticats. They traded Chick and they traded Gable recently. And we saw it last year near the deadline. They brought in Justin Capicotti and they brought in Xavier Fulton. But for the most part, you don't really see deals at the deadline because in football, it's really hard to bring guys in this late in the season and integrate them into either your offense or your defense. So I don't really understand why fans get so up in arms when the trade deadline comes and nothing happens. Is this bewildering to you, or am I alone here?
No, it's because people are stupid. I mean, it's true. If you're a CFL fan and if you watch for years, you know that this doesn't happen in the CFL. It's not like a game like hockey where, you know, you can just plunk some guy in there, some, you know, all right, I'm getting a little angry. I don't know why, but I'm getting a little angry. But you just plop someone. It's a different game than hockey. Hockey is a stupid sport. Put the puck in the net. Football is different. You have to learn stuff. Football players are smart. Hockey players are stupid. So it just doesn't happen. It doesn't happen in the CFL or the NFL for that matter, for what I know. So people who are up in arms and confused as to why this there wasn't a million trades on CFL deadline, you obviously haven't been paying attention for the last 50 years, you know? So it's just dumb.
Jeez, Mike's rant of the week going off on hockey. That was great, buddy.
I try my best sometimes.
Yeah, I don't get what, and the thing with the Ticats fans, like I saw, it wasn't a lot of comments, but it was a couple, and it's just, to me, it's like, what would you rather them have been eliminated last week, lost to Winnipeg? We wouldn't have had the great Winnipeg game that we all got excited about and had us excited going into the Calgary game. We sat here last week and we're discussing this game, the Calgary game, and we were like, can they win this game? Like, is it crazy? And I don't want to pat ourselves in the back because honestly, we're wrong a lot more than we're right. But a lot of the things that we said this team needed to do and the things that we were hoping to see came true, man. Like we talked about stopping the run and running the football, and we talked about keeping the game close. And aside from you saying they should score early and that would help them in the game, pretty much everything else we said happened and made for a pretty entertaining and heart-stopping, exciting football game. Obviously, at the end, it was the worst possible outcome that we could imagine. But the game was close, and if they would have gone into Winnipeg and got beat, or got beat badly, and we would have been like, oh, it's this. We would have thought that the Stamps were going to come in here. Like, it wouldn't have been as exciting. And I would rather have this be exciting than have it be something like, rather than have the team be out of it so they can trade off a couple veteran players to get some draft picks. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. And I believed when this game started, I believed that the Ticats were going to win this. I don't really know why. Well, I guess because it's a much improved team, but playing Calgary, we never beat Calgary. So for me to believe that Hamilton's going to beat the Stampeders, I had a lot of confidence in this team, and that's what makes this loss even more heartbreaking because you actually thought that this team could pull it out.
Yeah, it's when a team goes into a game and they get blown out or they lose and you expect it, it's not so bad. But yeah, that's why this one stung so much because you felt that they had earned the right to compete with this team and had earned the right to get a victory, and they just made too many mistakes. But that's the way the ball bounces, and I think we just gotta get over it, unfortunately. So we got to move on to the rest of the season. We got to move on to this next game coming up against Montreal. And to me, and to you, I think this is a really hard game to preview simply because it literally means absolutely nothing to either team. It's the Ticats at the Alouettes on Sunday. Both teams are already out of the playoffs. Both teams are playing for next season. I don't really know what we can talk about to hype this game up. I guess it kind of be interesting to see how each team approaches the game. But like outside of that, like there's not really what they do to win or lose the game. It does literally does not matter. So, Mike, if you're the Ticats in this one, what do you do? Do you treat this like the glorified exhibition game that it is? Or do you go about doing what they've been doing for this latter half of the season here and kind of play to win the game and treat it as if it's, yes, the season might be over, but we're not going to be pulling guys or resting guys. We're going to play our guys and we're going to see what we can do and maybe get some momentum going into the offseason. You know what? What do you do? What do you do in this situation if you're running the team?
I go full preseason mode because there is no momentum going into the off season. I mean, that's so far from, when the training camp starts. I don't think they're thinking about, we won two games, two meaningless games, three meaningless games against, two lousy, lousy opponents. Montreal being the two opponents twice. Ottawa's okay, but whatever. So I don't see any momentum going into next season. I go full preseason mode. Play the players that you want to see that you might get a peek at for next season. That's how I would approach this because it doesn't mean, I mean, it doesn't mean anything. These games are might as well be pre-preseason games. You know what I mean? It's just play the backups, see what they got, and go from there.
I'm a little curious how they will handle it too, because like at the end of the day, they still only have a 44-man roster. It's not like a preseason game where you can have 60, 70 guys dressed. Like they still
That's
have to play guys. Like, yeah, maybe we'll see a couple of backups get more playing time, perhaps. Maybe we'll see less of, say, a guy like Andy Fantuz, who he went down in this game, and I was terrified when I saw him go down because it was a non-contact deal. He's down on the field. He's clutching at his leg. It's like, oh my God, not again. Luckily, it was clearly nothing major. He came off. He came back into the game. But maybe we'll see that. Maybe we'll see some of the quarterbacks. And we have a question about what the team should do with a certain quarterback on this squad the last three games. We'll get to that in a bit. But at the end of the day, they still only have a limited roster. So it's not like they can sit a bunch of guys. what they could do, I guess, is maybe guys they know will or won't be back might see less time, and maybe we'll see some guys who we haven't seen all season get some playing time, like maybe some of the backup linebackers or some of the backup defensive linemen or maybe some guys in the secondary. Like, I don't know where this team could make changes, because at the end of the day, you still have to field a team, and these guys are still all professionals. They want to win no matter what. So I don't know. It'll be interesting to see what they do. There's some spots I think that we could see what you're saying, the full preseason mode type thing. But I still think at the end of the day, they're going to try to put out the 44 best players that they have.
Yeah. And they want to win, you know, even though to the fans in the stands, it doesn't really matter. Obviously, they're professional athletes. Obviously, they're professional coaches, and they want to win no matter what. So I think we might see a mixture of, you know, you might see the starters in the first half and then sprinkle in some guys throughout the rest of the game. But we will see.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to look at and see what we get in this one, and then see what we get. And maybe it'll help us look towards the games coming up after this as well. And seeing what they do here will kind of inform us as to what they could do going forward. Okay, Mike, time to move on to our weekly CFL picks, which get a little difficult when we get to the end here, because we're going to have to pick this game between Hamilton and Montreal. And if there's a bunch of backups in here, who the hell knows? It's like picking a preseason game, essentially. But there are three other games on the docket that do have some meaning. So let's start with Friday night in McMahon, the 13-win Calgary Stampeders host those sons of bitches from Saskatchewan, who, for the record, I now unequivocally hate for the rest of time, thanks to them losing to the Red Blacks. Good for nothing, Saskatchewan Rough Riders. We should annex the bloody province from the country and get rid of them. Anyway, Riders versus Stamps in McMahon on Friday night. Mike, who do you got in this one?
I'm going to go with the Stampeders, because they'll find some stupid way to win, and they'll pull it out.
Yeah, I'm going to go with the Stamps, too. They're just better. But I like your reasoning better than mine. So I'll echo your sentiments. They'll find some stupid way to pull it out. Saturday, we have a doubleheader. The first one kicks off in Toronto as the Winnipeg Blue Bombers head to Ontario's capital, take on the Toronto Argonauts. Mike, who do you like in this one?
I'm going to go with Winnipeg. I Toronto is still in a fight for first place, but Winnipeg's just a better team, depending on what's the situation with Nichols, and they had a couple more injuries. I know that one of their DBs, pretty much their best DB, Mo Leggett, I think, is out for the season, but I'm still going to take Winnipeg.
You mentioned the injuries. That's exactly why I'm going to go with the Argos. You mentioned Mo Leggett, done for the year with a torn Achilles. Matt Nichols is banged up. Darvin Adams looks like he's hurt. That adds to Weston Dressler still on the shelf. So that's a lot of injuries for the Bombers to take. They're pretty much locked into that number two spot. They're not completely locked in yet, but it would be a minor miracle for a team to catch them for second. And I don't think that they can catch Calgary for first. I even think if Calgary wins on Friday, that clinches the division for the Stamps, although I could be wrong. So if I am, someone please correct me. But I look at the Bombers and I think they're beat up. I think for them, it's about staying healthy going into the playoffs. So we could see them maybe play some backup guys in this one if that number two seed is pretty much theirs for the taking. So I'm going to go with the Argos in this one. I think they get a much needed win and boost their chances of winning the East Division. Saturday, second half of the doubleheader, we got the Edmonton Eskimos at the stumbling BC Lions. An Eskimos win here knocks the Lions out of the playoffs. It would be the first time they missed the playoffs in 20 years. Pretty crazy to think that the Lions, who I believe we both had making the Grey Cup this year, could be out of the playoffs. Esks, Lions, who are you picking?
The Esks. I think the Eskimos have turned the corner a bit after that long losing streak. And the Lions, you know, if the Lions had Lule in there, I think they'd be a playoff team. But Jonathan Jennings has shown that he's just not a starting quarterback right now. He's just brutal. And it can't be laid all on him. I know the offensive line hasn't been great either. But, yeah, I'm taking the Esks.
Yeah, a bit of a regression for Jennings this year, who I think we both had as MOP. We had the Lions both in the Grey Cup against the Ticats, so both of our Grey Cup teams won't make the playoffs. That's crazy. I'm going with the S as well. They're going to put the Lions out of their misery. The S won 7 in a row, then lost 6 in a row, and now they've won 2. They're a streaky team. I think that streak continues. They push that 2-game win streak to 3 and get the win over the Lions. And lastly, Sunday afternoon in La Belle Provence, the Montreal Alouettes host our Hamilton Tiger Cats. Mike, who do you got?
I'm going to take the Ticats because I just think they're a better team than Montreal. I think Montreal is the worst team in the league by a country mile. I think Darian Durant's garbage. I think Drew Willey's garbage. I think a lot of their players are garbage. So I'm going to take the Ticats.
I'm also going to take the Ticats. I think you're right. The Owls are awful. I don't think any changes they make are going to matter. I think they are far and away. I think this team, this Montreal team right now, is worse than the Ticats team we saw earlier in the season. And we've seen the Ticats play well over the last 7 weeks. So if they have even a slight bit of, if they play most of their guys in this one and they don't treat it like an exhibition game, I think the Ticats win this one in a walk. So I'm taking the Ticats as well. All right, let's get to some questions, Mike. We got a trio of them this week again. First one comes from one of the many Adams that likes to. I said the joke last week and we got, I'm an Adam who asks questions. I'm an Adam. Like, we must have 650 different Adams who listen to the show. But anyway, one of them.
Hey man, you don't even have that many listeners. Come
Well, there then the phantom listeners are also named
on.
Adam. So one of them sent in one, and it's about the Montreal Alouettes, a team the Ticats are going to play this week. He says, if you ran the Owls, would Cavis Reid be your GM? That's question number one. And question number two is, who would be on your head coaching short list? So, Mike, question number one, would Reid be your general manager if you were running the Owls?
I think he deserves another year. I look at the Montreal Alouettes and I think they just change things too often, especially after the, well, only after the Anthony Calvillo era. It's just been a revolving door of quarterbacks, head coaches, GMs, you know, it's just too much. So I'd take Cavis Reid as my GM for 1 year. And maybe if you can lure Ken Austin out of Hamilton, maybe he gets the coaching bug again. Bring him in. Maybe he's learned from his mistakes from this season. Maybe he will run the ball a little bit. Because I still think Ken Austin really helped this organization. We got to a couple Grey Cups. We were a competitive team for, 3 or 4 years or whatever it was. I still think that he has the coaching bug, and I still think that he can be a very good head coach. So that would be my pick.
Well, I don't disagree with that. Ken Austin could still be a good head coach. It just seems like maybe he has kind of a short shelf life. He's very, maybe he's Jim Harbaugh-like, who he's a great coach, but he wears out his welcome a little earlier than he should given his success. But to answer the Cavis Reid question for me, absolutely not. He would not. I wouldn't have hired him in the first place to be my general manager, to be perfectly honest with you. I agree with what you're saying in the fact that, yes, they have had a revolving door quarterback, and they've gone through coaches like it's no one's business. But sometimes you just have to admit that things aren't working, pull the plug, and start from ground zero. The Ticats did that when they hired Ken Austin all those years ago. They brought in George Cortez, and he was essentially what Ken Austin was before Ken Austin stepped down as head coach. He had the role of basically general manager and head coach. And after one season, they were like, this is not working. We can't do it. They pulled the plug. And then the Ticats became, with the exception of this year, a fairly successful franchise, minus winning a Grey Cup. I think the Owls need to burn this to the ground and start over. I think if they hold on to Reid for one more year, which they're going to do, unless they he gets the chance to hire a home run at head coach, I could see this team being last place again. And in a place like Montreal, that's not a good place to be. So no, Cavis Reid would not be my head coach as or my general manager. As for head coaches, I got two names. I didn't think of Ken Austin, to be honest with you. I didn't cross my mind. I don't know why, I just didn't. But the two guys I have are Devon Playbrooks, the defensive coordinator in Calgary, and the guy that I think I would put my first phone call into, Paul Lapolis. Look what Lapo has done in Winnipeg. Not only when he was the head coach there, got them to a Grey Cup, but look what he's done with Matt Nichols, who everyone thought had a lot of talent but never really had a chance to show it. Goes to Winnipeg, been an MOP candidate this year. Lapo went in last year. They turned that Bombers team around. He'd be the guy that I never thought he should have got fired in Winnipeg. I think he was the scapegoat for a lot of problems there from the front office, Joe Mack, cough, cough. But I think he'd be the guy that I'd call up as soon as the season's over, as soon as the Bombers are out. He's the guy that I'm placing my first phone call to.
Yeah, and I was thinking about it, like they let go a pretty damn good coach that could be a head coach too, in Noel Thorpe. Now he's floating out there. I'm absolutely positive he would not come back to the Montreal Alouettes, but that could be an option if they didn't let him go under questionable circumstances, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think if Thorpe was going to be a candidate, he would have been the interim coach. And I think we
Right.
talked about this when they were fired, when they fired him. I think that the reason they fired him was that they were going to bypass him anyway. So why keep him around if you're not going to give him a promotion? You're not even going to give him a chance to earn the job by seeing what he can do as a head coach. And so yeah, I don't think Noel Thorpe goes there under any circumstances. I'd be shocked unless it's like some they give him some ridiculous contract that no one could turn down. I can't see Noel Thorpe being there next year. This next question, we got this from a lot of people. A lot of them named Adam, to be perfectly frank with you. So I kind of paraphrased what the question was, and it was essentially, should we see Zach Collaros in the final three games? Mike, pretty simple question, but it has a pretty complex answer, I think.
Yeah, it does. It's a sure, why not? I mean, I said go full preseason mode. That means taking a look at all the quarterbacks, and Zach Collaros is obviously one of the quarterbacks. I think he's done as a Tiger cat. I think we ruined him. I think the offensive line that was put around him absolutely destroyed his confidence. But yeah, throw him in there, and maybe he does better in the June Jones offense than he did in the Ken Austin offense. So I don't have a problem with taking a look at Zach the last three games and see what he has left.
Yeah, I absolutely think we should see him. I think, like you said, we've talked about the whole show. These games mean nothing coming up, and I think we need to see what number four can do in this offense and see if maybe he is worth keeping going into 2018. I know it's highly unlikely this team is going to keep him. They'll trade him or cut him because of that salary, but I would rather know one way or the other whether he can operate effectively in June Jones's system than not see him and then watch him leave without knowing. You know what I mean? Like, I'd rather see him fail or succeed and go, okay, well, now we know for certain what he can and can't do, then see him not get the shot to do anything and watch him leave and go, I wonder what he could have done if given an opportunity. So yeah, I say give Calero some time in the final three games of the season.
Well, some people wanted to put him in the game against Calgary, which was absolutely crazy to me. I mean, he's always been doing so well, and then lunatic fans want to put Caleros in after we're on a roll, and I don't know. That just blew my mind, but people have different opinions, and that's fine.
You know, the backup quarterback's always the most popular guy in town. And for a guy who was at
Yeah.
one point a legitimate MOP candidate, I understand it. But yeah, you're right. It's a little nutty to see some people. And I still think Caleros can play. I do. And I've
Oh, yeah.
said time and time again, I think if they didn't make the change of quarterback and they just went with him, I think he could have operated very successfully in this offense. I think he could have done exactly what Jeremiah Mazzoli has done. But I think that having him sit on the bench and see that Mazzoli can operate in this offense, I think it might give him a little bit of confidence that, hey, if I do get back into this lineup for whatever reason, I'm not running for my life. We have a running game that I can rely on. Like, there's so many things in this where I would like to see him do it with everything around him that's working. Because then if he goes in there and still has happy feet and he's still missing throws on, then we know he's shot. And then, yes, time to move on. But if he goes in there and he plays ball, it might make for some difficult decisions in the offseason, but at least we'll know. And then the outrage that will come if they release him before free agency in the winter, we'll know one way or the other whether it's warranted, as opposed to not knowing. And that's, I think, the worst thing fan-wise is thinking that, oh, what if he gets a shot? What could he do? And then not knowing, never getting that opportunity. I think that would piss people off more than watching him go in there, perform good or bad either way, and then seeing what the team decides.
If he does go in there and he plays lights out, it does muddy the waters a bit, right? It makes the decision harder. And Zach, Mazzoli, Manziel, I mean, it's going to be a very interesting offseason to see what they do at the quarterback position, because they have three options right now.
No, I totally agree. And but you know what? That's why these guys get paid the big bucks to make these decisions. And I like I said, I'd rather know that he can or can't than not know at all. So I think we're in agreement here. Let's see what Zach can do in Jones' system, and who knows, maybe it'll provide a little bit of excitement in these final 3 weeks when there's nothing to play for. Last question, Mike, is one that was sent your way. So why don't you tell everyone what you got?
All right, this one comes from at Tony M. Cola on Twitter. Yes, seeing how the Tiger Cats have now injured three starting QBs this year, do you think other teams' starting quarterbacks coming up may be nervous or play more of a rush style of game to avoid possibly getting injured by our shutdown defense?
I don't think so. I think that the quarterbacks are playing rush, and I agree that they are. You are seeing some rush throws, a collapsing pocket more, quarterbacks not getting the time that they've had or did have against this defense back in the summer. I don't think it's because of a fear of injury, but I think it's just that the defense is better at pressuring the quarterback, and the secondary is better at guarding receivers. So we're just seeing the defense play better, and I think that's causing the opposing quarterbacks to play a little bit more of a rushed game. Now, obviously, I can't say for sure if the Ticats injuring QBs has or hasn't played a role, but it's kind of a bit of a chicken and the egg situation. Like, is the defense playing well and quarterbacks are afraid because of that, or are they knocking quarterbacks out and therefore quarterbacks are afraid of that, so it makes the defense look like they're playing better? Like, it's you can't ever really find the impetus or the inception point of where this happened, but I just think it's the defense just playing better, and we're seeing quarterbacks play poorly against this team because the defense just got better.
Yeah, I don't think quarterbacks are coming into games worried, oh, I gotta rush my throws or whatever. But I do think that during a game, maybe they get a big hit to them, and maybe that rattles them, right? They're professional quarterbacks. They're not gonna come into the game thinking, oh, I'm gonna rush my throws this game. But if they get smacked during the game, it might influence how the way they play.
Well, that
So.
yeah, no, I can't disagree with that at all, Mike.
Yep, yeah, that's my answer for that one.
That's it for this week. We will be off next week, so we'll be back in 2 weeks' time with another show. I hope you enjoyed this episode, and remember, you can subscribe to the show all over the internet, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, or as always, you can go to 3Down Nation and find it there. You want to throw us a question our way over the next couple of weeks before we get together again, you're more than welcome to do that. Hitting us up on Twitter, Mike, your Twitter handle, please.
Mike underscore Ticats.
And you can always find me at joshsmith_82, or you can post those questions in the comments section on 3downnation.com. Mike, that was episode 92 of Podskewiwi, very closely approaching that century mark. I am Josh Smith.
Now, Mike Graham, eat 'em raw.
Eat 'em raw.
Thanks for listening. Find more great shows like this at CF Pod Network on Twitter.